Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Generation, the podcast, the audio companion to the HBO Max original series, Generation. I am Gigi Good, famous American drag queen.
And I'm Wembley Sewell, editor-in-chief of Them. Gigi, it is so nice to see you again.
So nice.
Oh, gosh. I'm overwhelmed, truly. You can't tell, but I am shaking in my boots. But it's really great to be here again with Daniel, Zelda Barnes, you two. Y'all are the co-creators of Generation, and Lukita Maxwell, we have you back.
Hello,
the podcast.
Finally.
Hello. But before we get into truly the intros, Gigi, do you want to, you know, take us back and walk us through episode 9?
Girl, buckle up, sister, because it's a doozy. Listen, in episode 9, we're back. We're back with the gang. We're back with the girls. We are back into the interiorities of this incredible group of teens. But, you know, in this episode, first up, we have Chester's extremely, extremely awkward date with Beau that has too many vomit moments. So obviously, Chester is sour. Riley is more sour as the vitriol between her parents intensifies. Nathan is also sour because his mom, she tried to get him to confess the gay away, and he tells the pastor that he has a boyfriend, which is obviously a lie. He does not have a boyfriend. And Delilah is sour because her crush has a crush on Naomi, and Naomi won't stop talking about it. So everyone currently at the beginning of this episode and throughout just has a whole pity party for themselves. And then, you know, we kind of end on an incredible fake kiss between Nathan and his fake boyfriend, Chester. Quite a lot has happened.
It's a big one. A lot has happened. And like always, there's a lot to get into. But for me, I think that I had to hit pause after the date because it just brought me back. Like, that day I was like, I've been here. I've done this. I feel this. Like, I can feel the hair on the back of my neck rising through every single moment of that date. Haven't, you know, ended up covered in vomit, thankfully, but emotionally, maybe metaphorically, yes. I'm just so glad to be back. I'm so thrilled to be reunited with y'all. And I think we need to find out, you know, why and how all of this happened. And so without further ado, welcome back to the program, Zelda.
Hi.
Hi, Zelda. And we are also so lucky once again to also have Daniel Barnes here. We love Daniel over here. Thank you so much for being here, Daniel.
I'm kidding. Thank you so much. I love you guys so much.
And last but not least, we are so pleased to welcome back Lukita Maxwell, who stars as Delilah.
Hey, guys.
Woo woo. All right. So shall we?
Let's go.
In this episode, we learn that some time has passed since the last episode. So Delilah has had a bit more time to process the birth. And it's clear, it's so clear, I think even from the beginning of when we see Lukita, your character again, that she's different now. She's had this huge life change and transformation, but we hear kind of like right off the bat that it's still a secret to some of the people that she's close to. And I would love to play that clip at the party where she's talking to Riley about how, quite frankly, not everything is everyone's business.
Roll the tape.
My parents don't. No. Oh. I don't know. We live in this world where it's all like, you have to tell everything to everyone all the time. And maybe it's just, I don't know, not actually always the best thing.
Look, I agree with this sentiment, but before getting too deep into it, Lukita, could you tell us what your interpretation is of what's happening to Delilah here and what she's letting us into?
Yeah, I think she's got a lot on her mind. I think that since the last time we saw her, she's tried to start processing a little bit of what happened in her body. She's trying to figure out how to be a normal teen again and what a normal teen means to her. She was never one to fit into that box of what a normal teen means, but now she's trying to find any sense of normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
When she's saying that, she's also thinking about Cooper a little bit and her crush on Cooper and feeling like she's betraying Naomi, her best friend, a little bit.
Yeah.
But also like toying with that idea, going back and forth. Should I tell her? Should I not tell her? And in this moment when she's talking to Riley, I think she's leaning on the maybe I shouldn't say anything and just swallow my feelings and kind of figure my own stuff out on my own. Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember when I was a teenager being so confused about what the difference between a secret and a lie is, and when is one bad and when is one good. And I think it's really hard to grapple with. Like, I think Delilah doesn't know whether to tell Naomi her real feelings about Cooper, but she's partly doing it to protect Naomi, you know? And so it's a, like this lie that's like kind of for a good purpose. And she's sort of doing the same thing with her parents. And I think you know, this was sort of one of the things that this episode, in fact, this whole block is really exploring, is like secrets and lies and the ways that they can be so confusing and sometimes good and sometimes bad. And I think the other thing that Delilah says here that's so critical is like she doesn't want to be defined as a teen mother. And, you know, and that's one of the things that this show is dealing with all across the board, is like when you put a label on yourself, when you identify in a certain way, does that define you forever? And whether that label is like, you know, your gender or sexuality identification, like I just, you know, that's one of the things that she's sort of confused about. Like, I don't want to be defined in this way. I don't want everyone else to define me for me.
I think that's a really interesting perspective here, especially when it's put up against this idea also of secrets, because you could say, you know, labeling yourself, declaring yourself as something is the opposite of a secret. But both labeling and, you know, keeping things to yourself can be seen as self-preservation and actually quite affirming either way you look at it.
Yeah, no, and I'll just also say, like, I think, you know, as I probably talked about way too much in the last podcast, we really wanted to stay away from tropes of secrecy and shame and like regret in adoption storylines, because and I mean by secrets I mean like the sort of traumatic effects of keeping things secret, because we just weren't interested in it. Our experience of adoption, you know, has been so joyful and miraculous, and I think we really wanted to focus on that. And so the other thing I think that Delilah is doing here is she's wants to be the author of her own story.
Yeah.
And so she wants to tell it in the way that she wants to tell it, but that means keeping a secret, which is just an interesting and complicated thing.
But I think that's the power of choice. That's the power of choice. And it also makes me think about, you know, Delilah's crush. And Lukita, I would love your perspective here too, because she has a big choice to make, Delilah. She has to choose in some ways a little bit between going after what she wants for herself and this friend group that does seem kind of stronger than ever with you know, the necklaces now, and you see her, you know, kind of holding it in a lot of scenes. And I'm curious where, you know, you acting this out, bringing this to life, how you've been processing that.
When we were shooting 9, we shot it when we came back from, I think, the holidays. And we were all just so excited to be back on set and so excited to be together. And so I feel like that I had that feeling of being like, oh my God, I'm back with my girls. Like, we're all here, we're all together. And the three of us on and off screen have gone through a lot of stuff, and even just acting out the scenes together have like really gone through it and have always been there to support each other. Nathania and Chloe, I kiss.
Shout out.
Love ya.
But yeah, I think she's just very, very confused, very torn. There's this really cute boy that she likes, but she's also, I think, confused about liking somebody, because the last time she liked somebody, something crazy happened to her. And she last time she went for it. And on the other side, her two friends that she's finally found, she's been kind of not, she's kind of been isolated from the show and in the show until she found Naomi and Ariana, and she just values their friendship so much. So,
yeah. Well, that's so clear. And I love hearing the little BTS, you know, friendship moments too. Love that.
Let's talk a little bit about the romantic zone of it all. I'm referring specifically to Chester and Beau, and this is the first episode where we see a sort of traditional date. I guess, I mean, if you want to call their date a traditional date, but I just mean that in the sense that it's not just a hookup. It's not just like a little slow burn between friends. It's, you know, a cute regular date at the skating rink where Chester is dressed in head-to-toe rainbow pride gear on accident and is very open about his big expectations. And, you know, on top of all of that, slips and falls on vomit. Beau vomits all over the table. We need to move on from the vomit conversation, but before we do, I need to know from Zelda and Daniel, why did you put us through the unending awkwardness of this date?
Big why.
We had so much fun writing that and talking about that in the writer's room. It was just like we wanted, because, you know, you would expect that Chester would just know how to set up like a perfect date. And so we had so many conversations about how to do something kind of unexpected with this moment and how to make it maybe not that perfect for Chester or his date. And just to have him kind of like have such high expectations and have it go kind of horribly wrong. And so we had so many conversations about like all the ways that it could go wrong.
I feel like it brought me back, like I mentioned at the top of this episode, to just some of the most gut-wrenchingly like terrible moments. I won't even call them dates. I just feel like I have to call them moments in time. And I'm curious if, like, when writing this episode and throwing out every single possible thing that could happen, like what was that like, and what kinds of things were being thrown out?
Do I tell them, Zelda, about the other
autobiographical
piece?
I'm trying to remember what they all were.
No, I want to know if I should give away the this is so embarrassing, but there's a little, this is another, sort of semi-interesting behind the scenes, like, tidbit, but when I was in grad school and, like, so broke and looking for temp jobs, Zelda's covering her mouth like she can't believe I'm about to tell this story, but I signed up to be a party entertainer. And I showed up at a kid's birthday party.
Oh my God.
As Aladdin. And a number of the things that those kids scream at that pirate in the roller skating rink were things that were screamed at me, like, your teeth are yellow and are you Jewish?
Oh man.
So there was some, you know, personal exorcism that was happening in writing, but, you know, they say write what you know,
put it
and
on
open
the page,
up your veins,
yep,
and let it put it all on the page. So I did. But I think we were just also really interested. Like, Chester is such a, as a character, is somebody who's, he's really, really complicated, as we've discussed before. And I think it was interesting to us to take this character who in some contexts can be so poised and so confident and put him in a situation, you know, when he's with Sam, it's different, right? Because he's testing boundaries. He almost knows he's never going to get away with it on mm-hmm. some level. And here there's somebody his age that could actually be, like, as he says, real boyfriend material. And it was, we were just interested to see what happens when Chester really wants something. And then, like, it starts to fall apart. So his, like, he compensates by becoming just too extra and then experiences genuine pain afterwards.
We're talking about episode 9 of the HBO Max series Generation, and we're going to get into a lot more after a quick break.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are talking to Generation creator Zelda Barnes, director of Generation Daniel Barnes, and Lucita Maxwell, who stars as Delilah. Let's definitely talk about this steamy kiss between Chester and Nathan, which definitely sparked some concern for some people in that scene. You know, kiss scenes are political, I think, on all fronts, and gay kissing scenes have been so contested. So I just, please tell us the thinking behind the shooting and editing of this scene, because, you know, the people who were in the background watching and what that kind of represented for the scene and how that represents the relationship moving forward. You know, also sex scenes in the series just more generally.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of the thing was, I mean, the episode is called Deep Fake, and so mm-hmm. part of it is just, you know, was exploration of lies and where that brings you. And so in the scene before, when they have the X-Files viewing party, and then Jay says the line about truth that I can't remember, that's like what sparks Nathan in that moment to think about, wait a second, like, here's a lie that Chester could maybe help with, and proposes it. And, you know, it's really complicated. And I think, you know, yeah, I don't think I'm giving anything away, but it becomes an interesting thing about this, how this unfolds between them and who is culpable in this. And, you know, they each have things that they sort of want from each other, but it's also kind of fun. And when we first wrote the script, we actually put like 6 action lines for this kiss. We knew we wanted it to be long.
Oh, yeah.
And we have this phenomenal intimacy coordinator that Lucita can talk about as well, Rachel, who guides us with all of these things. And when we were shooting that kiss, it was, you know, it was interesting. We've discovered some things about kissing on screen. And I hope this isn't too graphic and weird for people, but like the importance of actually seeing some tongue mm-hmm. in order to really sell a kiss, and seeing the kind of a tongue going through kind of a mouth, because we did not want to back off. And when we were editing the episode, questions came up about the length of the kiss and whether the kiss was overstaying its welcome. And I think what Zelda and I felt was, A, it is really fucking hot. That is a hot kiss, okay? B, it's great for these characters. Like, it unfolds in acts. And there are 3 acts to that kiss, mm-hmm. you know? And Nathan, you see him surprised, you see him enjoying it, and then act 3, like, he is passionate and in love, and it makes it complicated. And the other thing is, Gigi, as you mentioned, is the history of gay kisses on screen. They have so traditionally been chased fast.
Yeah.
You have, you know, not queer actors doing them and then trying to do them quickly overcompensating by, like, eating the other person's face off. Like, they just don't look real. And I think for us to have 2 openly queer actors having a queer kiss. And so when it came, like, do we shave off some seconds? I think Zelda and I were like, no, this kiss should go on and on and on and on and on. And it should make up for, like, all of those decades of, like, short, chaste, same-sex kisses. So we want that MTV Best Kiss Award. And we want it bad.
You have my vote. I don't know where to send it, but you have my vote. It was really beautiful to see. And I hope it sets a precedent for all future kisses to come. If it's not that, I don't want to see it.
Not interested.
Hats off to y'all. But I am curious, because, I mean, thinking of a different kind of intimacy, and Daniel, you shouted out, you know, that Lucita knows what it's like to kind of bring something like this to life. But a different kind of intimacy to me was also like that birthing scene and like what it kind of took to go through that and bring that to life. And I'd like to hear about that experience too, because I don't think we got too much into it. But then launching back into that mirror shot we got of Delilah after we saw all of those super, super, you know, high energy, high emotion birthing scenes, and then cut to the quiet, really intimate, you know, reflection of Delilah. And I would love to hear, Lukita, your perspective on that true, like, kind of juxtaposition there.
From my perspective shooting it, when we first started working in the bathroom, Rachel Flesher, our intimacy coordinator, was incredible. She was talking through with me all of these breathing patterns, where I would be feeling physical pain. I would be like sitting on the ground in the tub with her, like rehearsing the scene moments before we shot. And then she'd be like, move your pelvis like 2 inches this way. It'll just make it like, it'll make you feel this much more in it. And
wow,
I had to go home and decompress for like a day or two after shooting those scenes. And Rachel would text me and check up on me and be like, here's a breathing exercise. Light a candle, associate a scent with comfort. I can't imagine what it's like to actually go through childbirth because I was kind of going through it for a day after shooting those scenes. But yeah, especially in episode four, when the actual birth happens, like you said, Wembley, it's like a very chaotic, very loud, very emotional scene. And comparing that to episode 9, where she has this kind of moment of peace with herself and her body before school. She's going back to school, going to see her friends.
Right.
And it's not a regretful moment at all. It's not she doesn't dislike her body. She's admiring the scars that she has, and she's content with the habit that she's living in, and trying to figure out how she can live in this body and still be a normal teen and find what that means to her. And now she's thinking about a boy all the time. So this is what's on her mind. So.
Yeah. The wishes she wasn't. Of all the characters, Delilah really wishes she was not crushing on a boy.
So much so. Oh my God. Not a cis straight man.
That moment also is really interesting. I love how you feel that moment, Lukita. I think it's so incredible when you're standing in front of the mirror. I just, again, you know, like what we talked about in 8, these private silent moments that you fill out as an actor that are so extraordinary and so rich and so layered are incredible to watch. And it was, just as an Easter egg-y kind of thing, also a bit of a callback to the pilot when Greta is standing in front of the mirror, because we kind of wanted to kick off this second block with a callback to some moments in the pilot. I mean, another little Easter egg was when Riley starts to open up to her parents, to Greta, and gets interrupted as everybody runs in. In the pilot, there was that moment when Greta's opening up to Riley about her mom and gets interrupted. And so we were just kind of like looking for ways to kind of like thread it back together. But like Zelda said, it's just so interesting to see like where Riley and Greta have come to in like such a reversal in their relationship.
Let's talk about Riley for a second in this episode, because, you know, we haven't really talked about her a lot, and a lot is happening to her.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing right now is her mom's inner child room, which is, to me, just like so out of left field and like the last thing I was expecting. So I just kind of want to know the inspiration, like what brought about, of all the problems for her mom to have, why the inner child?
Well, that one, again, there's a bit of an autobiographical thing, because Ben, Zelda's other dad and producer on this thing, has had a family friend whose wife actually like built herself a house for her inner child. I don't know. It came up in a writer's room one day, and we were all just like obsessed and couldn't stop thinking about it.
I thought it looked like fun.
It did look like fun. Don't get me wrong. I would spend some time in that damn room, but I mean, it's like, that's crazy that that's a real thing that happens to real people.
Oh yeah, totally a real thing. But it also was, you know, we just thought it was interestingly so traumatic for Riley and for somebody who like values her space. And when you are in her room in that first block and it's so beautiful and she's created her dark room, we're just like thinking about like what a violation it would be for her. And, you know, you asked about Riley. We're getting the sense that like there are some mental health issues that are going to be unfolding for Riley.
Oh my God, yeah.
And they do. And I think that's one of the things that's really that we're excited about in the second block. I think, you know, like speaking from the older generation's perspective, like one of the things that's so interesting about like Gen Z is their openness about sexuality, but also their openness about mental health. And it's so interesting when I sit around and I listen to the cast talking and they're talking about like, oh, I was diagnosed with this and now I'm on this meds, but I'm going off those meds. And like, those were things that like people were not talking about when I was in high school or like sexuality. They were really shrouded in secrecy and shame. And so it's interesting. And Zelda really wanted us to kind of go down this road. And I'm excited that we are going down this road to sort of explore what happens with, you know, Riley and some of her mental health stuff. And it felt like we needed a really traumatic beginning to it. And so it was like her mom has to take over her room. She's got to turn into this inner child thing and like kick that off.
I mean, as light and fresh and childish as this room is, it is very dark. It feels very dark, very shrouded, like you said. But it's interesting that Riley is almost taking on that narrative of not letting people in, kind of like how you said when you were in high school. She's kind of taking that on. She's not telling anybody. I don't think she has any intention on telling anybody what's going on, but it does feel like she just wants someone to know.
Yeah.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Well, you said that there's a lot to come for Riley, and I would love to hear from all of your perspectives as we embark on this second block. Without spoiling anything, you know, what you kind of feel is next for everyone? What kind of defines some of the things that we're going to see through the second block?
We definitely do explore mental health and issues of mental health a lot more in this block. Something that's very important to me. It's something that's very important to a lot of the cast. So that was really exciting to get to kind of explore all of those issues in this block too. And also, in our block one, we kind of explore a lot of relationships between two people. We kind of have the Riley-Greta relationship, and we have Nathan and Chester, and we have Chester and Sam. And in block two, we kind of get into some more groups of three, some more trios, some more like circles.
We're
going to
have some juicy love triangles.
Yes, we love a triangle.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Also, female friendship, too. I think, you know, I love that moment when you open up the helix from Ariana. I'm talking to Lukita directly. But, like, I love that moment when Delilah opens up the necklace from Ariana and is like, I love this more than life itself. And I think there's some interesting and complicated explorations of female friendship to come.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, the thing about shows about teenagers is it's actually in some ways interestingly hard to explore relationships that are friendships that are non-romantic. And this is the thing that Zelda kept reminding us in the writer's room. She's like, all of these shows are like all about romance. She's like, but really, like, so many people have never date, or they're like crushing on this one person, or they're in the same relationship for 4 years, or like you're not even thinking about romance because you're just like bored, or you're hanging out with your friends. And so she kept kind of like pushing us back to like exploring complications and conflict and joy between friends. And I love that we get to do that within this show.
Listen, y'all, Wembley and I have become attached to this show. We are attached to this cast and the characters. I am like, I don't know why I can't. I just am beaming with pride for all of you. I'm so excited to see what is to come. And I really want to thank you all so much, Dan, Zelda, and Lukita, for being here. I love y'all.
Love you.
Thank you, Gigi.
I'm so excited to see the journey that every single character is going to go on through the rest of the season. But in the meantime, we will be back with more BTS gems and exclusive generation analysis next week and every week until we run out of episodes. So thank you all so much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Wembley. Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Bye, y'all.
Generation the Podcast is a production of HBO Max and iHeartRadio, hosted by us, Gigi Good and Wembley Sewell. The podcast is produced and written by Phoebe Unter, written and researched by Sierra Kaiser, and engineered, edited, and mixed by Matt Stillo. It's executive produced by Ethan Fixell.
If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed Generation the Podcast, please do so on the iHeartRadio app, HBO Max, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, be sure to watch the series itself on HBO Max. Thanks for listening.